All right. Hi, everybody. We're back for another RCFB talk. It's RCFB Talk 61, and we're going to be talking about the Knowles. My name is Bob Akairi. I'm going to be joined by JD and Sirius, and we've got a guest. So, all right, JD.
Yeah, fantastic. Happy to be here on a Thursday night talking to a long, long friend of mine, that Carter Carls. He is originally from Texas A&M. He has bylines at the Dallas Morning News, USA Today, had a stint up in South Bend, Indiana for the South Bend Tribune covering Notre Dame football. And now he is here to talk about the Knowles as the brand new beat writer for the Tallahassee Democrat. Super excited to talk to him. And Carter, you know, it's been a huge camp for Mike Norvell and his team so far this year. What can you tell us about the Knowles so far in the first couple of weeks that you've been able to witness them?
Well, first off, guys, appreciate y'all having me, and thanks everyone who's listening. I think, you know, this offseason was a pretty big one for Mike Norvell. First two seasons for him were, you know, not really measured that harshly because of not just what he inherited from Willie Taggart, but also the COVID season. Really, really challenging for him to really get started off the way they probably wanted to. But, you know, this is kind of that first season where it's like, okay, you know, haven't had a winning record in a while, so this needs to be the year, right? And I think, you know, third season, if you haven't had a winning season, by that point, it's hard to really have confidence about where the direction of the program is going. But I think Mike Norvell and his coaching staff feel pretty confident about their chances of reaching that bowl game. If I were to predict where, you know, what their record would be after the season, I'd probably say a 7-5, maybe a chance to get 8 wins with a bowl win. So I see the progress is there. They've got, you know, pretty good continuity around the roster. Yes, they lost Jermaine Johnson from last year and a couple other guys, but they returned a lot of other guys as well. So, and, you know, Jordan Travis having that continuity at quarterback. They added, you know, 13 transfers that all seem to be, you know, at least not all of them, but a good amount of them will be either starters or contributors this season. And a few of them could have a chance of being stars this season when it comes to guys like Tatum Bethune, Trey Benson, Jared Verse. Those are probably a few names to know, but yeah, I think this is a program that Mike Norvell inherited and really had to do a rebuilding job. And, you know, he's pounded the transfer portal pretty hard. And I think this is kind of the year you'll see them finally trend in the direction that they want to trend.
Yeah, I imagine, especially with this being year three with Mike Norvell, it's going to be a put up or shut up type of season for him. I know, especially during this offseason, one of the first Twitter spaces that I think truly went viral was that Twitter space on letter of intent signing day. And we ended up seeing Travis Hunter, the number one recruit in the country, decide to go to Jackson State, where, you know, very famous FSU alum Deion Sanders is coaching, ended up losing that. I'm really curious to know what's been the mood from that kind of fallout from this offseason. Has it been any kind of distraction, or has that just kind of been like, hey, heads down, continuing to put in the work?
I wouldn't say it's been a long-term distraction. I think it's just has caused the fan base to be a lot less trusting of, oh, we got a verbal commitment. Well, yeah, let's see what happens on signing day. I think that's kind of what's happened. The funny thing about that story is I was on a kind of panel with David Hale at ESPN the other week, and he said that Mike Norvell told him that he nearly joined the space, that like he was seconds away. He had his finger over the, you know, over the join button and was really thinking about it, but finally said, probably shouldn't do that, right? So that would have been probably one of the most insane, I mean, it was already one of the most like insane moments in Florida State social media history. Probably could have gotten even more crazy.
Oh, that would have pushed it into a whole other ballgame. I don't think that's ever, the moment a sitting coach comes on to argue on a Twitter space about, you know, how things are going in a program, you know, that's not like, you know, something like this, but like, you know, a bunch of fans came together to vetch. That would be something else. That would be, my goodness.
Even for FSU Twitter, that's a different level.
But if any fan base on Twitter would be the one to kick it up a notch and kind of push everyone to the side, it would be FSU Twitter, because no one's is, yeah, I mean, I mean this complimentary. They're crazy enough to do it.
You know, I don't know what his intentions would have been. I think he actually would have tried to play it off well. I don't know if he's going to go in there and yell at people. I actually think he would have tried to endear himself to the fan base, and maybe it would have worked in the short term, but I think he just got to hop in for like a second and hop out, because I think after a while, I mean, that Twitter space, I was in there way too long, way longer than I should have been, and it was truly iconic. I know there's a story in The Athletic about it, some other places. That just is an all-time college football Twitter moment for sure.
And listen, first and foremost, you know, Mike Norvell, if you are listening on a burner, please request from your official account. We would love to hear your side of the story. If your finger is right over this space right now, we would love to hear from you as well. But Carter, even beyond Twitter spaces, this seems like it's going to be a big year for Florida State to see whether the Mike Norvell experiment is going to continue after this season. I know that you mentioned that this is going to be an optimal season. You have some faith that things are going to click. What do you think is going to be necessary for Mike Norvell to continue coaching at Florida State after this season? I know that you mentioned, you know, they could get to the bowl game. Would that be enough for people to say, hey, we've been making the progress that we need to see? We still think that Norvell is our guy.
Yeah, I think a lot of it depends on what it looks like, because you could say, oh, they made a bowl game, but they lost to Clemson and NC State, Miami by 50. You know, that's not really progress, right? But I don't foresee that happening. I'm just saying 6 wins, 7 wins can look different. Like, we'll see kind of the margins that they, you know, have in those losses. But I think really it goes down to the coin flip games. And you look at you look at last season, and I mean, the coin flip games really got them, right? They start off with Notre Dame, take them to overtime, can't pull it off. The infamous Jackson State game, right? That, you know, happened. We all know what happened there. And, you know, Florida was another one, but, you know, they finished the season pretty strong. And I think the end of last season was what kind of gave this program hope. They start off 0-4. They had all the reason in the world to quit, right? And they finished the year 5-3. And they get a huge win over Miami, you know, their rival. And, you know, they had some, you know, positive things. And I think, you know, another key will be Jordan Travis being healthy. Anytime he's played for Florida State, they're a much better team. I think when he's not started a game at Florida State, well, since he's been there, I think they're 1-6. And since he's been there, when he started a game at quarterback, I believe they're 7-7. So much better team when he's playing. I think they have confidence. He gained, I believe, like 15 pounds this offseason. They believe he's more durable, you know. And this is really the first year in a few years that they've entered the offseason with a quarterback cemented as the starter. You know, last year they had the whole Mackenzie Milton and Jordan Travis deal. Having him as their cemented starter, you can tell it's given the offense a little bit more confidence to push their boundaries and really see what they're made of. And I think they have a pretty good sense of what their identity is now with 9 days left until the opener.
So the Noles open with what should be a pretty easy FCS opponent. It's Duquesne. They've got, the smallest stadium in all of FCS because they reduced their capacity. It's only like 4,500. Obviously, they're not playing in Pittsburgh. But how big is that following week? The LSU game at quote-unquote neutral field. It's the Louisiana kickoff in the Superdome. So it's going to be LSU's, you know, second favorite party place. How big of a game is that going to be for the Noles?
I mean, I would call it the biggest game of Mike Norvell's tenure so far at Florida State. And I think it's a game when you look at it, it's, you know, Florida State won't be favored. And I think most people would pick LSU to win. But a win in New Orleans over a program with a history like LSU, I mean, it would just do wonders as far as momentum on the recruiting trail, just inspiring confidence and the belief that, hey, things are, you know, going the right direction. I believe LSU right now is a 3-point favorite. And so, I mean, you could categorize that as a potential coin flip game, right? I think this season, I keep saying coin flip games. They've got quite a few of those this year. You win your first, and man, okay. And then you play Louisville. If you win that game, you're 3-0. And I mean, you really are starting off the season better than you have in a long time. And you look at LSU and a pretty vulnerable team. I mean, they replaced a lot of starters. They've had some, you know, obviously instability and issues, first year coach. They're not, I wouldn't say I fully believe in their quarterback situation either. So, you know, you look at LSU and I think first game of the season, brand new coach, brand new starting quarterback. I believe by the end of the season, they'll be a much better team. But game one, what LSU are we going to see? And Florida State having that kind of tune-up game, I think people overvalue that because it's, you know, you're playing an FCS school. It's not very good, but can't hurt. And you'd rather have that than be, you know, a team playing their first game with a new quarterback, new coach, and a ton of transfers just getting their footing right. So you win that game, though. I really think this is a season where you begin to wonder, man, okay, is 8 wins possible? And, you know, a season like that would do wonders for this program.
Certainly. And as you said, obviously LSU's got a new head coach and they're putting in their new system. I think the whole Brian Kelly saga and all of this would somewhat paint FSU as, you know, it's weird to put it, but I think we, you know, people like that kind of story. They might be the good guy outside of Louisiana heading into that game. I think FSU's going to be the one. I wonder if public sentiment's going to be behind them just because some really kind of want, especially I think up in South Bend, would love to see Brian Kelly fall flat in his opener on such a high profile game.
Yeah, I can see that. I think college football fans love chaos. So anyway, that cut you off. What were you going to say?
Oh, no. So I was like, that was just my editorial there, I think. Obviously, after last season, it's hard to necessarily say it's going to be a can't hurt, you know, FCS game. Who knows? Maybe we'll see. But again, the Dukes, you know, are not a power by any stretch. That should be. I mean, Jacksonville State, okay. It was a shocker to watch them lose to them. But at the very least, you could say Jacksonville State was a pretty significant FCS team. I mean, even before they're going to join Conference USA, you know, they were one of the teams everyone was pegging as, you know, not quite NDSU, but on that level. Let's see here. JD, you had a follow-up.
Yeah, I did. So with this LSU game, I think that's going to feel kind of like a really strong setter for Mike Norvell for this upcoming season. But I'm really curious to know what kind of a referendum this would also be for their new offensive coordinator. I know that offensive line has long been an issue for Florida State ever since Jimbo was there. But we've kind of seen, you know, first and foremost, we've seen a lot of, there's really no other way to say it, magic happening from Alex Atkins, bringing in a bunch of multiple 4-star rated offensive linemen. He's now got offensive coordinator on his title now. He's one of the very few to be that joint offensive line and offensive coordinator position. What can we expect from him as he takes over that new title?
Yeah, it's very, very unique. And if you haven't seen the story I wrote about him today, feel free to check that out. But yeah, he is one of 4 offensive line coaches in the Power 5 who are also the offensive coordinator. Now, there's co-offensive coordinators and co-line coaches, but like the sole OC, the sole O-line coach, he's 1 of 4. So it's a very unique position. I will add, Mike Norvell will be he'll be heavily involved in the play calling and the offense. And, you know, that wasn't as much the case last year. So it will be interesting to see how that goes. And, you know, you talk to so many people about Mike Norvell and sort of his philosophies and what worked at Memphis. And people always rave about, you know, the offensive mind that he has. And I think he just hasn't really been able to show it yet with the personnel he's had at Florida State. This year, I think you'll begin to kind of see that a little bit. You know, Trey Benson is a running back transfer from University of Oregon who, you know, I think has the chance to be really special, really explosive running back. Really, when they took him initially out of the transfer portal, it was kind of seen as I don't know about this because he, you know, had a pretty significant knee injury in December of 2020. Wasn't sure if he'd ever be explosive again, but man, I mean, wow, he has been pretty special this offseason. Johnny Wilson is another guy from Arizona State. He's a 6'7", 235 wide receiver who I think has a chance to lead this team in receiving this year. Just a you know, large catch radius. He can be your security blanket over the middle. He can be your, you know, guy that you go to in the end zone on a jump ball when you're in the red zone. So, you know, they've added a couple other receivers to that room that are intriguing, Micah Pittman, Deuce Span. So I think they think this offense will take another step this season. I don't expect, you know, I would expect Jordan Travis to be about middle of the road in the ACC just because of how strong of a conference it is this year at quarterback. And I don't expect this offensive line to be particularly good. I still think they're probably below average. And, you know, you mentioned LSU, one of the better defensive lines in the SEC and in the country. Will be interesting to see that matchup week two. I think that will be where LSU really has the advantage. But LSU also replacing a lot of guys in the secondary. So if this offense has truly taken another step forward in terms of the passing game and the quarterback position, that might be an area where you really exploit LSU.
Carter, Alex Atkins has racked up quite the reputation as an offensive line guru during his coaching history so far. He's gotten some guys at FSU that have won awards recognizing them, you know, freshman All-Americans, that kind of thing. But it seems like it's been a bit of a revolving door in terms of the stability on that line. Lots of different lineups. We know that offensive line depth was an issue when Norvell came in. It hasn't gotten a whole lot better so far. They've still been having to kind of plug and play guys as they go. Do you think that all these transfers and these highly rated recruits that are coming in this recruiting cycle, is Atkins going to have enough time to work with them and coach them up to really see that big impact this year? Or is this going to be kind of like a baby step and 2023 would be the big step forward that we would expect considering the rave reviews that guys like NFL players like Cameron Clark have given for what Atkins can do as a coach?
Yeah, I definitely don't want to sugarcoat it because when Mike Norvell took over in 2020, this truly was one of the worst offensive lines in the country. I mean, just statistically, when it comes to sacks allowed, rushing yards a game, yards per attempt, I mean, pretty much every metric was almost bottom 10 in the country. So they had a lot of work to get done. And the offensive line, with it being a position where even the best players aren't going to see the field until year three, that's a position that takes a while to really, especially when you take it over the way that they did, it takes a while to really turn it over the way that you want. But you have seen the incremental improvement each year. They've been a much better running offense over the last couple of years. A lot of that's because of Jordan Travis. But yeah, I think these transfers that have come in, one guy I want to mention in particular who is really exceeded my expectations is Bless Harris, who was a guy who came from an FCS school in Texas in Lamar. And, you know, Mike Norvell admitted to us the other day, I didn't know if he could play offensive tackle. I knew he could play guard, but I didn't know if he could play tackle. And it was kind of a, let's see what happens with him. Well, he came in and immediately he took over that right tackle spot and really held his own. I'm not saying he's going to be a special offensive lineman for you this year, but adding a guy like that, you know, they had 10 newcomers on the offensive line. I mean, it's just ridiculous how much they added on the O-line this offseason. It's their big priority. And I'd say maybe where you are confident about the future is seeing some of these freshmen come in, like Julian Armella, who is an in-state kid, four-star, top 100 on Rivals. He's come in and in scrimmages, he has at some point started at left tackle. And I don't think he will start at left tackle this year, and he may not start at all. But he is someone that you can build a future around. And I think in years past, you know, maybe Florida State felt good or could kind of hold up with their first team, but you have an injury and there's no security blanket. And you'd watch a practice and you'd see the second and third team D lines just dominate, but that hasn't been as much the case at times this year. Still getting better, and they will still lose their fair share of battles. But the second team, third team O lines in practice have been way more competitive. So overall, to just wrap up my word salad there, it'll be just an incremental improvement, I think, and they have more of a security blanket if injuries are to happen this year. But I think where you're going to really see that progression is, you know, in the next couple of years.
Carter, on the flip side of the ball, you have Adam Fuller, who has been improving as a defensive coordinator. He's got a couple of different guys that he now also gets to use for this upcoming season. I mean, you've got Kevin Knowles, Amarian Cooper. They're going to be in the secondary back there with Jamie Robinson. What are we going to be expecting out of the Florida State defense come this fall?
Well, I think when you compare, or when you kind of weigh the pros and cons, I think the biggest con is, well, they don't have a Jermaine Johnson. But how do you set that standard? I mean, that guy was absolutely freaking incredible last year. The ACC Defensive Player of the Year, obviously an amazing pass rusher, but what he could do against the run, man, I mean, it just was special. And I think you're going to see him have a great rookie season on the Jets. They also had a third team All-ACC defensive end and Keir Thomas, who they were going to replace. But when you look at this team, this defense, I think the strength is that there aren't many glaring weaknesses. They may not have a Jermaine Johnson, and they're probably not going to have a player who's even close to Jermaine Johnson, but they're not going to have many glaring weaknesses. I look at the defensive line, and at defensive tackle, they've got two All-ACC caliber players and Fabian Lovett, Robert Cooper, and they've got a lot of depth in that room. Defensive end is pretty intriguing. Derek McClendon, they got the number two defensive end in the transfer portal, and Jared Verse, who has really looked the part. And then you got a guy like Dennis Briggs, who is a versatile player that you can put in a lot of different situations. Linebacker, they added, you know, an all AAC linebacker in Tatum Bethune, and that could be a guy that leads you in tackles this year. I really believe that. And they've got a couple other guys there that are playing their best football. Safety, you got a first team all ACC safety and Jamie Robinson. Everyone knows what he can do, but I think what makes this safety group really intriguing is what Akeem Dent has shown this offseason. I think, you know, he has been a lot more consistent. He was a player who was a five-star recruit out of the 2019 class and really showed a lot of inconsistency because he was switching positions constantly. You know, he'd flash here and there, but really hard for him to feel comfortable. Well, the last three games of last season, he really started to come on, and in the spring, he had a great spring. So I'm really intrigued with that safety group. Cornerback group, maybe a question this year, but I think they feel good about how that room is growing with, like you mentioned, Amarian Cooper, Kevin Knowles. Those were two freshmen who were just getting their footing last year, and now I think they're going to be better players this season. So, yeah, I think just overall defense, biggest thing is not a lot of glaring weaknesses, and this is, you know, they won't have a Jermaine Johnson, but they've got a chance to be a top 35 defense, I would say.
Well, Carter, I just want to do a quick station ID. You're all listening to RCFB Talk 61. Our guest is Carter Carls, FSU beat writer for the Tallahassee Democrat. I had a quick question for you, just sort of making it a little bit lighter. And by the way, everyone, Carter's good enough to take calls. So if you have questions about FSU football, Knowles, whatever you'd like, just feel free to hit request, and we'll do our best to get to as many people who have questions as we can. But my question for you is, obviously, coming in to be the beat writer for Florida State, everyone knows how passionate FSU Twitter can be. What's that been like for you to become part of that Twitterverse?
Man, I freaking love FSU Twitter, man. I think a lot of sports writers can get annoyed with passion and the crazy fans and their mentions, but I just like fan bases that care, man. I mean, like, I'm sorry. I think it's really funny when there's a bunch of memes out there. And, you know, you mentioned the Twitter space last December. There are some really funny people, and I've been laughing quite a bit. Now, maybe my tone changes when their anger is directed toward me, and I'm sure that will happen soon. So I reserve the right to change my mind. But no, they're a funny group. I mean, I've had a chance to cover a few different schools, and they're definitely the funniest group of fans I've interacted with so far. And still getting to know FSU Twitter a little bit. Started in January, but I've seen the memes. I've seen the craziness that they can have, but probably nothing like what it's going to be like this football season. So I'm excited for that.
Carter, I know that you're a relatively new transplant to the Tallahassee region. So as somebody who has covered football in Texas, who's covered it out in South Bend by Notre Dame, what strikes you immediately if you're a recruit? Why would you want to go to a place like Tallahassee, at least based on your first couple of impressions of covering the team and the city?
Yeah, it's the thing with Florida State is a lot of it has to do with geography. I mean, when you're this close to Georgia and you're in the state of Florida, kids are freaking within driving distance of you. I mean, they don't even have to try sometimes. They'll have a recruiting camp and they're right there. People just walk up to the facility and there they are, you know. But whereas when I covered Notre Dame in South Bend, it was such a destination that was hard for a lot of kids to get to. So, you know, you'd cover a recruiting camp there and you're like, I don't know who any of these kids are. I don't even know if they got Power Five offers, you know, whereas Florida State, like, you don't even have to try that hard. And a five-star receiver is going to be, you know, visiting your school. So I think the proximity is probably one of the biggest things. Obviously, you've got just the history of the program that's obviously working for them, too. But really, to me, it's a lot of it is geography. And I think too, I mean, look, man, like Florida State is, you think of just college football and Florida State's got to be up there, right? And you think of the war chant, you think of just like what they've done in the last, you know, with Bobby Bowden, Jimbo Fisher. So, I mean, I don't know, a lot of it has to do with history. A lot of it has to do with geography. And a lot of it has to do with just what the atmosphere is like and, you know, what it's like playing against teams like, you know, Clemson. And, you know, you look at the 2026 schedule, they're playing Notre Dame, Alabama, Clemson, Miami. That's a pretty fun schedule to play. You know, I mean, I know the ACC gets a lot of crap, but Florida State scheduled some pretty strong teams. They're going to play LSU and NOLA this season. They're going to play LSU and Orlando next season. Got some pretty fun games coming up. So, you know, you come to Florida State and you're going to be, even when you're not a good program, people still care about you. And I think that's important too, is, you know, a guy like Jermaine Johnson is on a 5-7 team last year, but enough people care about Florida State that he can get his name out there still. You know, he really took a chance last year coming to Florida State. He probably would have been a day two pick at Georgia. He would have been a top contributor for him, but he may have not been a featured guy on that defensive line. And he felt like if he was a featured guy somewhere like at Florida State, oh, maybe I can be a first-round pick. And that's what he did, and that's what he proved. And didn't matter that they're a 5-7 team. Didn't matter that they lost to Jacksonville State. Enough people care about Florida State that, you know, you're gonna still get your name out there at the end of the day.
Joshua, you wanted to join us and have some comments. We'd love to hear from you.
Carter, bro, what's up?
My man, what's going on, Josh?
Hey, bud. Hey. I really don't think or believe that your Florida State readers understand how much you changed the entire narrative of how Notre Dame media and fans talk about recruiting because of that one article that you had out after the Army All-American game about Brian Kelly being a little lax on some phone calls. Has that been kind of like a thing you've heard it within your circles now down there and in Florida State is, you know, what they do differently? I mean, you know that, right? Like you're that article in the South Bend Tribune is still talked about today. Like I just mentioned it last week on the podcast.
Gosh, man, that All-American Bowl was something else. I had an idea that I was going to write about that. Then I talked to those kids and oh my gosh, it took it. We talk about Florida State Twitter, Notre Dame Twitter just went nuts with that. But yeah, I guess with Florida State, if we're comparing just like what their coaching staff is like recruiting wise, it's really important to have a coach who is energetic and cares about recruiting, man. I mean, and I think Mike Norvell has shown that. He's, you know, in his low 40s and he's a highly energetic guy. And he is very involved with recruits when it comes to them coming to campus and calling them. I think maybe what the issue for them recruiting-wise has been, they didn't have a lot of Florida guys on staff. It took a while for them to kind of establish their footing in Florida. And it didn't quite take advantage of Miami and Florida being pretty bad the last couple of years. They also struggled to gain their footing because of COVID in 2020. So, you know, when you can't have kids on campus, that certainly hurt them. So I still think they're playing a little bit of catch up. When I look at just where they've been recruiting well, where they've not been recruiting well, they've been recruiting really well in the trenches. You look at their 2023 class, you look at their 2022 class, a lot of their best players are on the O-line and D-line. And I think that speaks to the job Alex Atkins has done. It speaks to the job that JP, John Papuchis, Odell Hagans, those three are three of the best recruiters on that staff. Skill position, they've got a lot of work to do there. And they've got a couple guys I think they're excited about. I know they got a four-star running back, Samuel Singleton, in the 2023 class. They've got a guy who could probably be a five-star running back in the 2024 class, Cam Davis. So I think they've got some hope there. I think wide receiver could be a lot better. Looking forward, I think the biggest thing that I kind of look at with Florida State is how heavy they've pounded that transfer portal. They've gotten 10-plus guys in each of the three off seasons. Mike Norvell has been here. And it's a strategy that's worked, for sure. It's worked for Florida State. It's worked for Mel Tucker at Michigan State really well. But how sustainable is that? If you're trying to gain your footing in Florida, if you're trying to gain your footing in Georgia, can you afford to take 15 high school kids a year? Can you afford to rely so heavily on the transfer portal? And I think that's kind of the next step for them, is they've really got to be able to break into Florida. And you've seen Mario Cristobal do it at Miami. You've seen Billy Napier do it at Florida. And I think Florida State's got a few recruiters on their staff that can really put them in a position well. And the fact that they're recruiting so well in the trenches, that's where you need to recruit well to build your program into something. That's where it starts. So I think that's a positive sign for where they could be in the future. That next step is just gaining their footing a little bit more and then getting those skill position guys.
Josh, thanks for coming up to send a great question. You know, Carter, you mentioned Mario Cristobal and Billy Napier, two new hires in the state of Florida at two rivals of Florida State. We're actually looking at a chance now where Florida State's had a little bit of stability, something they haven't had a whole lot of the past few years, compared to their rivals. What kind of position does that set them up as compared to the rivals, as Norvell's trying to build this program back to where it was and the others are still getting their feet underneath them at their new P5 institutions?
Yeah, it's helped. And I think when you look at the last 2 years for Florida State, they had, you know, some of the youngest rosters in the country, at least in the Power Five. So I think when you look at sort of where their roster is now, they got a lot more veteran guys. They're full of transfers who have been there. I mean, you look at Fabian Lovett, Robert Cooper. Those are two guys that have played more games than just about anybody in college football. So when you're stacked with those grown men, that can really do something for you. You know, I think Miami's in a pretty good spot right now. I know a lot of people are really high on them. Tyler Van Dyke really could be a pretty good quarterback this year. We're going to see. Seemed to show it at the end of last year. Florida, I'm not super high on this year. I think Utah is going to be a hard opener for them, and they've got some pretty hard games. SEC East is pretty strong this year. So if they're, you know, have a losing record heading into that Florida State game, I think Florida State can take advantage of that. But I think just overall, like, it's helped them in that they've kept a lot of guys with NIL. I mean, Fabian Lovett, Robert Cooper, those are two guys. If NIL wasn't a thing, I don't know if they're on the roster this year. Jordan Travis, the continuity there. I mean, they haven't had that quarterback in a while. They haven't entered an offseason with a starter submitted there in a while. So it's helped them a lot, and I think it's positioned them well to, you know, get 7 wins or at least, you know, make a bowl game this year.
Carter, one thing that struck me from Florida State camp so far is the return of these legendary alums coming back to speak to these younger players. I mean, Peter Boulware and other guys have also been coming back onto the scene. Charlie Ward is another name. that's come around on the scene. What has been that kind of impact of having those type of alumni come back and speak to these guys?
You know, I was recording a podcast the other day, Wednesday, with Jeff Colhane, who's a new voice, Florida State Seminoles, new radio voice. And something that he said, he had Charlie Ward on his podcast, obviously legendary Heisman winner. And he said that one of the things that Charlie Ward said to him that really stood out was he felt like this was the first time Florida State has really had a family-like atmosphere in a long time. And that just really stands out to me, right? And I think for the people who don't know Mike Norvell, he is a highly energetic guy who really cares. I mean, he is somebody that you just watch one practice and you can see how much that guy, you know, gives a crap about stuff. So they have been very intentional about including former players. They had two practices in Jacksonville last week. And my goodness, I can't even count how many former players showed up. And, you know, they brought them all together. They had them talk to the team. And we were even talking to the kicker, Ryan Fitzgerald, today. And he was talking about how he's been talking to Graham Gano all offseason. So they've really been pushing that to their players. It's been really helpful for them. I know Charlie Ward's message, Peter Boulware's message was like, hey, man, like when they spoke to the team, it was about the challenges they went through as younger players and how it wasn't easy for them. So just to have that sort of legend kind of give you that kind of advice, that has to be valuable. And then for the former players, it's great for them to be able to kind of relive those memories and be plugged in to the school that did great things for them. So it's great all around, and definitely more of an intention from this staff than what's been there in a long time.
I have to say, I just realized, I think FSU is, even though it's only year three, I think they're tied for the longest tenured coach in FBS in Florida, because I think it's a tie with FAU, funny enough, and USF, I think, if I'm right there. I think those are the only three schools. Everyone else has had a new coach in the last 2 years. I mean, Miami, Florida, FIU, and UCF. That's kind of amazing to think, especially after years where, I mean, those of us who grew up watching college football in the 80s and 90s, that's pretty striking, because those were some long tenures there. So, Carter, looking to this season, going into it, we talked about those first couple of games and how obviously Duquesne, LSU, and potentially Louisville, that would be, if they can get through those three, that would be a hell of a start to the season. What are some of those games on the backside that have got your attention or seem to have also importance? Because obviously things could go rough. I mean, last year, the way the season opened was, you know, I think the first time since 74 that something like that had happened to the Noles. But looking towards the middle and kind of latter half of the season, what are some of those games that will be really important to setting a tone for where FSU is this season?
Yeah, when I look at this schedule, I think to expect Florida State to start 3-0, unrealistic, right? But if you can start 2-1, I don't think that's unrealistic. And I think they would be put in a really great position. And I think the most concerning part of the schedule to me is how they start October. They begin their first game with Wake Forest, which I don't know what Wake Forest is going to look like at that point with Sam Hartman and his situation. Prayers up to him, and hopefully he has a speedy recovery and it's not too serious. But you start off with them in October. Then you go to NC State, which, man, Devin Leary and those boys, they really could be one of the best in the ACC this year. After that, you go to Clemson. Or you're hosting Clemson. And so that's a three-game streak where you drop all three of those, depending on how you start, that could really derail your season, right? If you start 1-2 and you win Boston College, let's say you're 2-2 and you lose three in a row, 2-5, that's a very dangerous position to be in. But hey, maybe you start 3-1 and you can win one of those games against Clemson, Georgia Tech, and Wake. I think the most likely now at this point it would be Wake. Man, I'm so bad at math, but that would put you at, 4-3? So that would be a really good spot to be in. Then you head into Georgia Tech. It could be 5-3 heading into that final stretch of you know, at Miami, at Syracuse, home against Louisiana Lafayette, and then home against Florida. I think as far as the importance of this schedule, like what's the most important thing, it's going to be those coin flip games. And when you just look at the schedule, as far as like what are going to be one score margins that Florida State could turn their way, probably would say LSU, Louisville, I'd say Wake, I'd say Florida. After that, I mean, some of these, I don't know what NC State would look like, but I mean, that's four right there. And if you can win three of those, I mean, you're in a much better position. Last year, you start off 0-4, and we saw them lose two coin flip games in Notre Dame and Jacksonville State. So if this program has truly taken that next step forward, they're going to win at least half of those games, hopefully more than half of those games. And that will be the difference between getting 7 or 8 wins and getting 5 and 6 wins.
Carter, from what you've been able to see, at least in your first year of reporting so far, what's going to have to be the one step that Florida State really needs to do in order to make sure that they get to that victorious march at the end of the season? Like, what, you know, injuries aside, game planning aside, what's the one thing that they have to do better this year in order to make that bowl game?
Got to have a better offense. I think their defense, pretty confident they're going to be among the top 40. They could potentially be top 30 nationally in defense this year. Offense, still some question marks. You could say there's a question mark at pretty much every position. I think we see improvement at every position on offense, but just how much improvement, I don't know. You know, you look at the wide receiving room, they had 4 transfers. They've got 2 guys you really like in Johnny Wilson and Micah Pittman. But do you have a number one receiver? Last 2 years, this is a pretty unbelievable stat. They have not had a player reach 400 receiving yards. I mean, that is just awful. That is awful. And this year, I think they're going to break that mark. They're probably going to have multiple players break that mark. I think Johnny Wilson, Micah Pittman, Malik McClain, those are your top 3 guys. I think they feel pretty confident in them. But I don't see a number one receiver, like a guy that's going to get you 800 yards, 8 touchdowns. That's the bare minimum. What's unfortunate for Florida State is they seem to have gotten that guy in Winston Wright, who was a second team All Big 12 wide receiver at West Virginia, an exceptional kick returner. And unfortunately, in March, he suffered a pretty significant injury in a car accident that he was involved with. And he's been out since. And when he returns, I'm not sure, but that was a huge loss for them. And that was a guy who would have been the only, you know, he is the only receiver who's had more than 400 yards in a season. So losing that was big for them. So who's going to be that number one guy? Very curious. Running back, I think, you know, they lost Jayshon Corbin last year, but I think there's reason to be more optimistic about this room this year than last year, just because of the progression that Lawrence Toafili has made and what they have in this new transfer, Trey Benson. A tight end room, offensive line, lots of questions. Jordan Travis seems to have improved with the better weapons he's got. Whether he can stay healthy and whether he can kind of translate what he's shown in practice in the game, I mean, we'll see. But I think this is an offense that takes that next step this year. But how much of a step, I'm not sure. You know, they've still had a pretty bad offensive line as far as the sacks they've surrendered. They've still, you know, have had not a great passing efficiency offense the last couple of years. So those are two areas that I want to see improve. I think they will, but yeah, I just don't know how much they'll be. And I think how much they improve in that regard will kind of determine how good of a team they are this year, because you've got a lot of confidence in what that defense looks like so far.
Well, as a quick reminder, you're listening to RCFB Talk 61. If you have a question for our guest, Carter Carls, FSU beat writer for the Tallahassee Democrat, just hit request. You know, Carter, we had a question off of Reddit. Let's see. Doopy10 asked, realistically, how much improvement can we expect from the Noles this season? And does your gut tell you we beat Miami, Florida, or Clemson? You didn't say and, or.
I don't see Clemson. Miami, I before I go all in on the Mario Cristobal Hive, the Miami Hive this year, I want to see, you know, what their offense looks like. I think there's reason to believe they might run the ball more than people think this year. We're going to see if Tyra Van Dyke is that dude like people think. So you're at Miami. They're going to be really hungry. I mean, Florida State, last year it was like their Super Bowl, man. I mean, they convert that 4th and 14, and it's on every shirt that Florida State has sold this offseason, a 4th and 14. Incredible play to Parchment from Travis. So that win that left a sour taste in their mouth, and I think they're really going to be hungry to kind of avenge that. Whereas Florida, that was a game that Florida State lost last year by 3, and it kept them out of a bowl game. And now you're going back to Doak, and it's going to be a Black Friday game. I think anything can happen in that game. If I had to predict it right now, I would have Florida State in that game. Just because I think Florida State is going to have more to play for at that point. You know, Florida, I think their schedule sets up in a way where by the end of the season, like I don't know how inspired they're going to be compared to a Florida State team that, like, they just want to make a bowl game this year. Like, that's all they want, really. So if they're sitting at 5 or 6 wins, you know, and they obviously lost to them last year, I think they're going to be pretty motivated. I mean, I don't want to go too far with that because, obviously everyone's motivated for a rivalry game, but I just think that's a game that Florida State's going to circle at the end of the year, and I think it's a game that they have the talent to win. So that was one of the 4 coin flip games I mentioned. The other ones were LSU, Louisville, and Wake. Again, you win 2 or 3 of those, especially 3, I think you're in a pretty good spot at the end of the year.
Carter, I wanted to circle back because I'm still blown away by that stat that you shared of no wide receiver has gotten that 400-yard mark, which to me, I think if you told anybody who watched that 2019 Memphis Tigers team that Norvell had coached, I mean, you had guys like Antonio Gibson and Calvin Austin putting up numbers. I mean, even the running back, Kenny Gainwell, he was getting 600-plus yards as a receiver, as a tailback. And I'm just really curious to know, you know, we've seen this type of issue now at Florida State where they haven't taken that next step yet. You have Ron Duggins back. He's the alumni from Florida State. What's kind of been that dynamic with him and Norvell as they go into this season?
Yeah, I think the biggest reason for that stat has just been they haven't had guys who can win one-on-one matchups. It really hindered the offense the last couple of years, and it's a reason why you can't harshly judge Jordan Travis for his lower moments. It's really hard to be a successful quarterback when you don't have receivers who can win one-on-one matchups. But that's changed this offseason. Malik McClain was a true freshman last year, just sort of getting his footing. I think he's got the highest long-term ceiling out of any receiver on this team. He's a former 4-star recruit, really looks the part in practice, and wouldn't be surprised if he led this team in receiving this season. Micah Pittman, I mean, everyone knows that guy. I mean, Michael Pittman Jr.'s little brother, right? And, you know, I'm not saying he's going to be like his older brother, but definitely the best route runner on this team and is a guy who plays bigger than he is. He's about 5'10", 200, but, you know, he can play like a 6'2 guy sometimes with some of the balls that he catches. And then you got Johnny Wilson. I mean, 6'7", 235. What he can get in those close quarters, in those jump balls, that's something Florida State hasn't had. So you got 3 guys you're feeling really confident in this year. I think they take that next step. But like I said, I'm not expecting a 1,000-yard receiver, a 10-touchdown guy. I just don't think that's really realistic for the group.
Carter, when we're looking, because obviously you covered, you know, Notre Dame for all those seasons, and I know Josh, when he was on earlier, kind of talked a bit about the time you spent there. How has it been shifting gears from covering the Notre Dame to covering FSU. You talked a bit about Notre Dame was a destination. People kind of had to move their way there. But just generally, the culture around the program, what have you noticed?
Yeah, it's hard to compare a lot of places to Notre Dame. It's a very unique place with all it kind of has to offer. And they're so academically centric. And you look at how they recruit, it's very national. They're getting guys from California, Hawaii, New Jersey. They got a guy from Germany. I mean, they're really all over. They play all over. They play, California every year. They play ACC teams every year. USC, it's very much a national, international brand, right? And Florida State is also a national brand, but they stick to their roots. A lot of the guys they get are in the Southeast. When you're in a recruiting hotbed like Florida, and when you're this close to Georgia, you don't really need to get guys from California. You don't really need to get guys from New Jersey. There's enough guys to get locally to really fuel your program and put you in the right spot. So a lot of guys on the roster are Florida kids, Georgia kids, right? Carolinas, like well represented on this roster. And I think what that may do for them, and I think it just speaks more to the culture Norvell's created. Like I mentioned before, big thing to him has been family. Like that's been sort of the thing with him. You talk to a lot of the transfers on this team. You talk to a lot of the newcomers. And it's something that they really echo. I think they've got a good culture here. And I think you look at this program 3 years ago, that was absolutely not the case. Absolutely not. And Mike Norvell, I don't think people really realize he had a huge rebuilding job to do when he took over, not just from a talent standpoint, but also from a culture standpoint. And this is kind of that first year where you've kind of seen that happen with all the continuity that's been on the roster. You feel like there's a really good, strong leadership on this team. Guys like Robert Cooper and Fabian Lovett, I mentioned those guys, Jamie Robinson, like they've got guys who have a legitimate voice now. I think that's kind of a big component for them.
Carter, we have really appreciated you coming on for an hour to talk about the Noles for a little bit. Before we go ahead and wrap up and let you go, where can we find you on all of your readings, on social media, podcasts, any type of beat reporting? Where can we find you this season?
Yes, sir. Yeah, so obviously you guys see my Twitter account here, so go ahead and give me a follow. And then Tallahassee.com is where you can find my work in Noles Sports. And then the Noles Sports podcast is where you can find my podcast. Tomorrow I'm going to have an episode with the new voice of the Florida State Seminoles as my guest, Jeff Cole Hain. A really interesting podcast there that I think a lot of people will enjoy. Really appreciate you guys having me. Love FSU Twitter, man. You guys are something else. So really, really, really appreciate it.
Well, thank you, Carter. It was great to talk about the Noles. And yeah, FSU Twitter is a fun part of the experience, I think, of college football on Twitter.com. So on behalf of myself, on behalf of JV and Sirius, we wanted to thank all of you for joining us. This was RCFB Talk 61 with Carter Carls talking FSU football. He's a beat writer for the Tallahassee Democrat. You can find him there. Thanks for listening. We'll talk to you all later. Now, I'm going to hang up and listen.